Ross Wayfield, Spring Fever. Sure was. At any rate, I can play with these buttons.
This is Ann Marshall, and you are listening to KISL 88.7 FM, broadcasting from Avalon, California.
And there you have it. Thank you, Annie. Okay, moving right along, now that we've taken care of a little bit of business. Sometimes spring makes me feel fidgety, like I gotta go someplace. And apparently that's a common experience because there are a lot of songs about spring in different places. So I have a whole string of songs about spring in places that are not here. I didn't find anything that said spring in Catalina or spring in Avalon. Perhaps I shall have to write that song myself. So let's start with spring in Maine. Spring in Maine. We'll start in the United States. This is Manny Album, Spring in Maine. Bing! Spring in Maine, Manny Album. I wonder what made that Spring in Maine. We rolled right into Seattle Spring. Tim Koss. Thank you. So that was Tim Koss with Seattle Spring, and we heard before that Spring in Maine. And I don't know what either one of those does have to do with Seattle or Maine. I've been to both places, and I did not get any scent of nostalgia on that. But I have in the studio now a special guest. We have here Jeff Labar, who I will give his microphone to. There, now you're hot. Can you hear?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Jeff Labar, and he's from the Hurricane Gulch Yacht Club, which is over in San Pedro in the aptly named Hurricane Gulch area.
That's it. Wind blows all the time there.
Pretty regularly at 4 p.m., though, too.
Yeah, I mean, it comes up between 11 and 1, and then it blows until about an hour after sundown, and always 3 or 4 knots faster than anywhere else.
And that's exactly where they put the unsuspecting anchors. Out there, which I was one of, although I was aware that it was going to blow like that. I met Jeff and his yacht club last year when I was coming down the coast, and they very kindly did a reciprocity thing. So Berkeley Yacht Club, if you're listening, you need to let Hurricane Gulch stay with you when they show up. And they have the honor of being the most sail out group, even though they're a paper club. They have the most sailouts of any yacht club I have visited, which is about 11 times a year. Every month they seem to go someplace, so they're a very active group, which I applaud. And they're here.
Yeah, we actually went it 12 times last year because, although it wasn't a cruise, we chartered some electric boats down in Alamitos and did the harbor cruise looking at the Christmas lights. So we actually got in 12 cruises last year.
And how hard is it to get into the Hurricane Gulch Yacht Club?
You need a boat capable of overnighting and $170 and not be idiots.
Yahoo! Well, that's...
Well, even that, you have to be congenial. You can be congenial idiots and join.
And so you have no club, but you do have a burgee.
Yes, no clubhouse, although we use the for our monthly dinners, we mostly use the community center at Cabrillo Marina, California Yacht Marina, Cabrillo. And we also occasionally go to restaurants or other venues for our monthly dinners.
So how would people find out about the Hurricane Gulch Yacht Club if they wanted to join?
You just look up hgyc.org on the internet, and we've got pretty much all the information, including our dinner and cruising schedule and who to contact and all that sort of stuff.
So can people show up to the dinner and say they want to check you out and see if it's their kind of club?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's best if you give a call to somebody because we make last minute changes and you might not get it. We mostly communicate by email, all these things.
How many members do you have?
I think at the moment, I'm not on the board anymore, although I was for several years. I'm the junior staff commodore, which is a fancy name for saying I was the last guy that was in charge before the current guy. I think we have between 20, 25 and 30 boats that are members, maybe 35. I don't think it's much more than that. But we had 34 people show up for dinner here in Avalon last Saturday. So
was it 35 with me?
It may have been. It may have been. There was a lot of people, is all I can tell you.
Two tables worth. A jolly bunch. And yeah, that was good. And I guess it's both powerboats and sailboats. You don't prejudice between one or the other.
No preference. We've got some very small boats, 27-footers. In fact, I think we've got a small powerboat that's probably not more than 20, 25.
Ooh.
And we have a big powerboat, 68 feet, and pretty much everything in between. We don't have a lot of racers, although we do have one racer that races under our burgee.
Okay. Well, I know the people I sat next to are quite race. They are very much racers. They're 20-some-odd time on the Ensenada race.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to say Tim.
Tim and Adele.
Tim and Adele. Yeah, they went a lot.
They actually left, actually most of the boats from our club left on Sunday. Tim and Adele managed to wrap their prop up in a sheet or a line somewhere and had to get towed back. So their boat's still sitting here, but they took the ferry home.
Oh, that's what's sad. That happens. Well, maybe we'll get to see them again then. Okay, and we were going to see if there was any segue for a spring conversation. And you said that... Oh, I want to mention your Latitude 38 thing. So if anybody out there is reading a copy of Latitude 38, tell us
about... The March issue.
The March issue. Tell us about what you got in there. Some ink.
Oh, well, they had asked for people to have reminiscences about Alaska Eagle, the Orange Coast College ex-whitbread racer. That they operated for many years, 20 years or more. And I had taken a sail to it, my first trip to San Miguel Island on Alaska Eagle. And on the way, we stopped at Painted Cave on Santa Cruz Island. We were backing into the cave when the gear shift broke off. So the
That's not good.
The captain very quickly turned the engine off and... jumped into the inflatable that was tied on the quarter and powered us out while we all raised the sails. It was quite exciting. So that wasn't my first time. I didn't get a chance to go into Painted Cave that time, but I've been in many times since.
I have never been in there. It sounds a little claustrophobic to me, and I don't mind small spaces, but it's like going into the dark with all those sea lions back there barking at you sounds a little scary.
Yeah, it's you can pretty much see the entrance. It's not quite very dark until it gets down to what we call the throat, and then
see,
it opens.
Going down a throat doesn't really sound very enticing to me. It sounds like being swallowed by a whale.
It's a little like that.
Okay, well we're going to adjust the mic, but we're going to listen. We're still doing our tour of spring in different places, and we're still in the United States. We've got spring in Manhattan with Mark Whitfield and Anthony Escobeda. So we're going to do that while we mess around with the mic. Thank you. So that was spring in Manhattan, as opposed to Seattle or Maine. And to me, it all kinds of sounds like jazz, and I'm not sure what makes it. I wanted something that actually felt like Manhattan. But we're going to go back to Jeff here. We've switched his mic. Let's try. Can we use this mic now?
Yes, hi again.
Oh, that's excellent. That's perfect. And I was asking Jeff while we were listening to that music about what he's planning to do this spring.
Well, this spring in May, I plan to sail to Hawaii with a couple of friends on his Catalina, one of the guys, Catalina 42. He's in our club. In fact, both of the guys that I'm sailing with are in our club. One, in fact, is a dock neighbor. And I've made one blue water passage before, which is more experience than either of my crewmates have had. But it's a good-sized boat, and it's very well prepared, so I don't anticipate much in the way of problems.
Now, is this the part of the race that happens?
No, this isn't anything to do with the Transpac. There is another boat going with us, similar sized, although the owner, captain of that boat, has really wanted to make a solo passage, so he's going to sail solo, kind of in tandem with us, or at least...
Buddy boat.
Buddy boat, yeah. So we'll be in radio range. We have single sideband as well as VHF and email, so we'll be able to stay in contact.
When I was watching, our Berkeley Yacht Club people often do the Transpac, and when they were preparing their boats, the big deal was provisions.
You know... Roger, the captain of the boat I'm going to be taking, fancies himself a cook, and he's pretty good. So he says, in addition to being captain, he wants to be the cook for the whole voyage.
Wow.
So he's doing all the provisioning, and we're kind of counting on him. So I'm hoping it's going to turn out fine.
Excellent, because one of the boats that came back, are you coming back?
Yes, we're going over on the 3rd of May and coming back on the 31st. We expect to spend 2 weeks going over and 3 weeks coming back, which I think is probably realistic.
How long are you going to stay in Hawaii?
A couple of weeks, 3 weeks.
All right.
We'll keep the boat at Alawai. He's already made arrangements with Alawai and with the, I guess that's what the, it's the Hawaii Yacht Club? I'm not sure what that yacht club is. Honolulu Yacht Club.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Alawai. So... he and his wife are going to rent a space ashore, and the crew and I, Chuck and I, will have the boat to ourselves. Yeah.
So there's four of you going?
Just three. Roger, Chuck, and I.
Does Roger have a wife?
Yes. Roger and Chuck has a wife, too, so she might join us on the boat.
Oh, that's going to be crowded. Okay.
there's just going to be the three of us sailing back.
Oh, okay. Well, so this boat that came back from Hawaii, they had packed more food than they possibly needed. And so because it had all, the cans had started to rust and stuff, they couldn't give them to the food pantry. So guess who got them?
Ah.
And they said, you know what this rust is from, right? You're not afraid of this? I'm like, nah, that's fine. Bring it on. But all of the labels had come off, so I had no idea what I was opening.
Right. That's one of the tricks. A lot of people end up storing their provisions in the bilge because there's a lot of space down there, but it's also very damp. You really need to have a permanent ink pen and write it on the can and then tear the labels off.
And I've heard if you shellac them, you can shellac.
I've heard of doing that too. That seems like an awful lot of work.
That's a lot of work. You got to really want your beans and whatever.
I did find a couple of cans on my boat, last year, that I'd stuffed in a place I hadn't remembered. They had really rusted all the way through.
That's why you do spring cleaning. Hey, there's a segue. I'm actually still in the midst of spring cleaning myself, and I've pretty much eaten everything on the boat like a little cockroach.
Well, I've had the boat varnished and waxed, so that's the first step, and then I'm going to send the sails out for service because I've got some tears and little repairs that need to be done. And then I'll do a real deep cleaning, clean the rug, and, you know, there's another boat on my dock. Katie and she and I rent a steam cleaner so that we can steam clean.
Good idea. Can I come over? I got some rugs that need steam cleaning.
Yeah, exactly. So
when are you going to do that? A week or so?
Sometime in the next couple of weeks. Yeah.
Okay, I'm there. Go three ways on that steamer.
Exactly. I'm sure that all the carpets and furniture on our three boats doesn't amount to one room in most normal houses.
Not even. And I try very hard to shake it out, but mine has a lot of dog hair in it.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
It makes it trickier.
Yeah, I've lived aboard for 3.5 years now, and I people ask me about it.
That's all?
Yeah. I've had the boat in the same slip. I've had the same boat and the same boat in the same slip for 25 years.
Oh, okay.
But and used to come down every weekend before I moved aboard. But I retired 3.5 years ago and moved aboard. And people ask me, and I say, it's like living in a walk-in closet.
That's...
Without the headroom.
That's a pretty big closet. I say it's like a shoebox, only or a space smaller than most people's bathrooms.
Well, it was, I think... Johnson, of the famous Boswell and Johnson, that said something to the effect that being on a boat is just like being in prison with a chance of drowning.
No! I don't like that at all.
Well, at sea. A ship at sea. You can't leave.
Well, sometimes a ship on a buoy feels like that. Okay, so in more springtime fare, we're going to go across the big water to Paris in spring and see if this sounds any more... Well,
Paris-y,
then instead of Manhattan-y, it's probably going to be urban. Let's see if it's urban. Woo! Michael Legrand.
Thank you.
And that was Paris in the spring. Now, I have never been to Paris, so I have nothing to compare that with, but that was pretty perky. Wouldn't you say that was pretty perky?
Yeah, that was perky. Again, not so much Paris, but perky. Spring.
Have you been to Paris?
No. I've been to England 4 times, but I never made it over to the actual continent.
I imagine that England in the spring is kind of soggy.
Yeah, mostly it was summer. One time I went at Christmas time, and that was interesting. We were down in Kent someplace south. Bristol we were, actually.
I think I would take a literature tour, you know, like a Charles Dickens tour of all the places that he wrote stuff. And
what I was mostly interested in was, you know, it was the heart of the Industrial Revolution, and I love seeing all the outdoor museums, you know, the slate mines and the old steam engines and Iron Bridge, and, you know, they have the Great Western, the first steamship that was ever built, and, you know, I mean, just really interesting stuff like that.
It's so much older there.
Yes, and especially seeing as I'm a third-generation Southern Californian, where everything is new.
Right. I spent a year in Germany, and the building I went to school in was older than my country by far. And they kept reminding me of that. I was like, it's not my fault.
Yeah, we are a young people.
We're
there's
newbies.
No question.
Here's another spring connection. The green wall behind us, which was painted for the TV show on Wednesdays, that's a very Kelly green, spring green color, don't you think?
Oh yes, yeah. Now, what kind of a background do you put in that?
Well, we can project different things behind it. It's that special green color that,
right.
like the blue screen, the green screen. Okay, yep. Apparently, I don't know. It's TV magic. I don't understand it. I do radio. Well, we were talking earlier about how when you first, early on in your first arrival to Catalina, you were at Howland's Landing?
Well, yes. I would say that my first crossing, and I've made, I'm guessing now, but I'm pretty sure close to 200 crossings.
Would you like to generalize your age?
I'll be 68.
Okay. that's not very general.
It doesn't feel old, but, you know, sometimes.
You're really 14 down under there?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So my first time was probably in 52 with my grandfather and my brother, younger brother, coming over on the White Steamship.
Mm.
In 1960, I went to Emerald Bay at Christmas time for a survival training with the Scouts. That was very exciting, a seminal moment in my my young boyhood. Kind of a rite of passage.
What did you do there to learn how to survive?
Well, first of all, there was only 50 of us, and they formed us up into groups of 10, took us in the back of a steak-body truck, drove us into the backcountry up above Parsons, gave us an open parachute, and kicked us out of the back of the truck.
Whoop! That's it?
Well, no. The next morning, they came by and issued us a carrot, a potato, and an onion. That was all the food they gave us for the entire week.
Are you supposed to go catch rabbits or something?
Yeah, we caught all kinds of things.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, there were goats and pigs all over the island
at that point.
Yeah. So, plus we made gill nets out of the parachute shrouds.
Can't play that game anymore, can you? No goats, no pigs, and you can't kill the bison.
The goat, I have to say, is best eaten more like chewing gum. You smoke it for 3 or 4 days, then you chew it until you can't stand it anymore, and you spit out the rest.
Wow.
And I also say, don't eat seagulls.
They're very fishy.
Very.
That's what I hear. I haven't actually tried one. okay, and so you survived that.
And then my next experience on the West End, which really made me fall in love with the island, was working at Howland's Landing at Catalina, what was then Catalina Island Boys Camp. It's now co-ed Catalina Island Camp. And that was in 65, 6, and 7. I was a counselor in 65, and then the maintenance mechanic in 66 and 67, which was great because I got to drive into Avalon every 10 days towing a 250-gallon butane tank to get refilled.
Oh, my. That can't be legal.
And we had an actual, of all the vehicles we had, only one of them was licensed to come into Avalon. All the rest of them were what I'd call, at that time, island vehicles, you know, no doors.
Derelict.
Yeah, no hoods, no windshields.
You can't get away with that so much anymore.
No, I think pretty much all the vehicles on the island have to be licensed now.
That, and plus with Jordan and his his decibel meter.
Oh, well, yeah. I've had some real Frankenstein vehicles that I put together out of bits and pieces.
Huh. Well, it's a certain charm of its own.
I really fell in love with Howlands and that whole West End. And one week when I was here in Avalon and it rained the entire week, I kind of decided to make a project and trying to determine where the water came from on the island, and interviewed lots of people, Southern California Edison, and got a chance to look in the archives at the Island Company. I actually saw the handwritten letter from Captain B.R. West, who had the company of soldiers during the Civil War, talking about getting water in barrels from Howlands Landing. So apparently Howlands Landing has been the source of water for well over 150 years, since before the Civil War.
There was a debate recently about whether or not the city owned the rights to the water, or somebody else did, or if they signed it away, or if they sold it, or if Wrigley granted it to the city. Did you hear anything about that?
No, this was some time ago, but I haven't heard anything about that. I mean, I know where the water comes from in town.
This
here
guy.
It comes from Middle Ranch Reservoir. But I believe that several years ago there was a cross connect made, and now that the water can be pumped to Two Harbors or from Two Harbors from Howlands if it need be.
Hmm.
That didn't exist back when I was, when we were there. It just all the water from the whole West End was supplied out of Howlands Landing, which is the biggest watershed on the West End.
Mm-hmm.
And the pump house is still back there, and you can see an old unused horizontal engine that was used as a pump, and the tower is still there for the drill rig. I was very interested and kind of became the camp historian. One of the things that always interested me is what went on during World War II at Howlands Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not find out from anybody. There was a guy that wrote the military history of Catalina Island, wasn't in there. I spoke to several people, including the owner of the camp during that period, Mr. Eddy. Actually, I think he was one of the founders of the camp. And had no idea what had gone on. They just knew that the military had taken it over and had used it during World War II.
And nobody else was allowed in at that point?
Nobody. And apparently it was quite secret, because I had never heard anybody say anything about what was there. As you probably know, the OSS occupied Toyon Bay,
mm-hmm.
and the boys' school there. That's the precursor to the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And they apparently trained spies.
Great.
Well, I was there in spring, 2-3 years ago.
That's the segue to spring right there.
There we go. I was there in spring 2 or 3 years ago, and was speaking with the owner of the camp, whose name I forget now. Very nice guy. I'd ridden my bicycle from Two Harbors. And we got to talking about this, and he said, I think I know the answer to what was there at World War II. He said, this last year, a boat came by slowly cruising up and down the coast, and people on board were shouting, this is it, or something to that effect in a foreign language. He said they came ashore and looked around and were all nodding and agreeing that this was it. It turns out that they were Koreans, and that they had been trained there by the OSS during World War II to infiltrate behind enemy lines because Korea was occupied. So that apparently is what it was used for during World War II. And I don't think I've read that anywhere else.
Jim Watson, are you listening? Jim Watson writes that column in the paper.
Okay, well, he's free to check that out. I mean, this is secondary source. This isn't from primary.
But Jim wasn't there either, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll find it, though.
Very good.
All right, well, we will move from Paris to Naples. Have you ever been to Naples?
No, can't say I have, but it's a major naval port, though. I just finished a book where they talked about having liberty at Naples, so.
I passed through there briefly, but I can't say I had any impression because I was moving so fast. So we'll try spring in Naples with Ralph Burns. that was Spring in Naples. Ralph Burns, it sounds like Naples is a pretty mellow place with not a whole lot of naughty stuff going on, according to that bit of music, if that can be believed. And you said you've never been to Naples.
No, the closest I've been to Italy is owning a Vespa and a Lambretta scooter, so.
Yeah, and when I went to Italy, I was so tired from the train ride, which was a long one. And I was in my 20s, and I was traveling with another girl, and we were kept awake by two boys who thought they were God's gift to women, and we were trying to dissuade them all night long, but that was not, in fact, the case. And then we finally got to Rome. We were so tired, all we wanted to do was take a nap. So we went to a place, we thought the nuns would be nice to us. They said, no, they're not going to be open for whatever. We just said we wanted to take a nap, could we please? Because they were, you know, it was like a kind of a youth hostel thing. Nope.
Right.
Their emphasis on the hostel. and then we tried to get something to eat, and nothing was open.
Oh, my goodness.
It was like 10 o'clock at night, in the day. And so we were just starving, and there was some place that had these nasty old pizzas from leftover from the night before, and it's the worst food ever.
Oh, my God. Having the worst food ever in Rome, that's just like a sin.
I know. So I'll obviously have to go back at some point and remedy that. Where's the farthest you've ever been? I mean, I've never been to Hawaii, so that seems like an awful long trip.
Oh, gosh, the farthest I've been.
Away from here.
Probably England. Yeah, I've been in the Caribbean. I went, took a week and sailed on the Barefoot Cruises SS Polynesia, which is a 236-foot, four-masted staysail schooner that was converted from a Portuguese codfisher called the Argus and turned into a cruise ship. And that was a lot of fun. I spent one night.
And by cruise ship, you're not talking about like the Princess Line cruise ships.
Oh, no.
You got to explain that.
The captain's in shorts and t-shirt and
is not carrying 4,000 people.
No, I think we had something around 110 passengers and maybe 30 crew, something like that. We all pitched in to raise the sails. Whenever we'd pull up anchor and raise the sails, they'd play Amazing Grace over the loudspeakers. It was a wonderful time. I sailed one night, I forget between which two ports in the eastern side of the Caribbean there somewhere, sailing out of St. Martin's. And I was supposed to sign up for 2 hours from 10 to 12, and I ended up staying until 6 in the morning.
Wow.
Just a gorgeous, gorgeous night. The trade winds blowing, the boat heeling over. You know, at first, steering this huge vessel, you're turning the wheel six or seven spokes at a time. And by the time I was through, I could anticipate it so well, I probably didn't turn a quarter mm-hmm. spoke at a time.
Everybody oversteers at the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's neat.
Thought you look up and find a star on the rigging and just follow that star for a while and then look down and check on the compass.
And see if you could agreed with the star.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds like a good memory.
That was my only time I'd seen the Southern Cross. So.
Oh, okay.
Even though we were still a bit above the equator.
And is the Hawaii trip something that you're doing as a, you know, bucket list kind of thing?
Not really. To be honest with you, I think blue water sailing can get a little boring, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted crew, and I had some experience and felt that, you know, it'd be a good thing to do. Up until just the last week, I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to go. I have had stents put in an artery in my heart, and one of them clogged up again, and I couldn't walk 50 feet without taking a hit of nitroglycerin. But
wow.
Last week ago Thursday, they put in another stent, and my gosh, I just feel like a new man, just, you know, racing around.
And so on the way back, are you guys going to shoot up north and then come down so you don't hit the...
Right. You have to go up over the North Pacific high and then come down. Sometimes it's highest to Seattle, and other times you can get to San Francisco. The blue water trip I made before on one of the Orange Coast College boats, called Volcano at the time, went up to Glacier Bay, but that was our intended landfall. But I'm hoping that we'll get no further north than San Francisco before we start coming down.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, switching gears a little bit, what would you say is your finest memory of Catalina?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I'd be hard-pressed to pick one.
I'm pressing hard. Maybe some animal you saw that was amazing.
I would have to say that first trip to the West End when I was 14, yeah, and the survival expedition, that kind of imprinted the kind of the smell of the island. You spend 4 hours crossing on a sailboat.
Five, and if you're in my boat.
Yeah, right. And it clears the nostrils, you know. You just kind of get nothing but sea air. And then when you close to within a mile, half mile or so, you get that island smell. And, you know, you could put me anywhere in the world and I'd be able to tell you exactly what that smell was.
Is it the plants, you think?
It is. It's the sage and the, you know, kind of the dusty, you know, because it's always typically make trips in the summertime.
Yeah.
I do remember one time coming over after we had those 30 inches of rain, that La Nina year or El Nino year, when we got so much rain, and the island was green. I mean, it looked like pictures of Ireland. It was just green, green, green.
And you're making a face when you say that. It's
well,
not good.
I mean, it's just, it was just...
This is a desert island. What's that about?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of
One
bugs.
Thing I will say that's been different in the... What has it been, 50 years since I started coming to the island, more than 50 years, is just how much greenery there is in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
In the 60s, there was nothing green in the summer except cactus, at least on the West End. And now, you know, we've got chaparral, we've got trees growing up. And
they're drought-resistant bushes, is that...
Right. The thing is that it was the pigs and the goats.
Oh, they were eating everything.
They were eating everything. And I know people miss them. I mean, there are people here that even missed a sheep. But
you know, when I was over town at Fish and Wildlife, I was, I told them about the fact that we have too many deer now. And they didn't even know about that. And they asked, so do you still have pigs and goats?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like, oh, come on. They've been gone for a while now.
Yeah, well, the deer are also imported. I mean, our largest, Catalina's largest native mammal is the fox. And it's pretty small. So the buffalo and the deer are the two large, not invasive, but non-native species
here.
Well,
I'd say the deer is pretty invasive.
Yeah, they're getting to be. And somebody said to me that they can't be shot because they're the property of fish and game.
Well, no, there is the hunting season goes from July into January.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really long one, and you're supposed to be shooting the does, and they don't belong to anybody here. They belong to the public.
Okay.
So if the public has problems with the deer, they need to tell Fish and Game, who are supposed to be, which
fishing.
Is why I made a comment. But you can see there, nothing's happened.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be a large hunting season. You said it ends in when?
January.
It used to go through pretty much through the winter, and I think that the reason was it was giving work for the people in Two Harbors as guides.
Oh. That's very cynical.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to listen to our last Spring in Foreign Places song, and then we'll do the top of the hour. This is Springtime in Istanbul.
Hmm.
Not Constantinople, but Istanbul. So we'll try
Same
that.
Place, different name.
Exactly. And that was Springtime in Istanbul, Golden Sachs Çınar Ape. I guess that's how you say it. It's got that little ch thing underneath the C. And somebody just walked by who had a big stripy outfit, and he looked like one of the Belushi brothers wearing that bee suit.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see him, but...
Maybe he's a reincarnation. The bee suit outfit. So you picked out a song.
Yes, I've always liked Brubeck, and the one I like the best is a short one called The Unsquare Dance, Dave Brubeck Quartet.
Right, we're listening to that right now. That syncopated stuff. Whoops!
Yeah, that's one of my favorites from the Time Out album that the Brubeck Quartet did. And I guess I'm supposed to announce?
Yes, we have a top of the hour, and you're going to do a nice station ID for us that we can use again later.
Very good. This is Jeff LaBar, and you're listening to KISL 88.7 FM in Avalon, California.
Brilliant. And, you know, you maybe should get your own radio show because you've got the voice for it.
Thanks.
What would you play? What kind of music would you play?
Oh, to be honest with you.
This is Dustin from Glenwood Springs, Colorado, and you're listening to KISL Avalon 88.7 FM.